Triple Option back in this week. We're going to take a break from Purdue. We're going to take a break from the NFL playoffs. We on Three Sports Guys, we kind of talked about the coaching thing. We're going to talk about that. I want to talk a little bit about the college coaching. Pop, stop shaking your head. We talked about it, and we have a topic we want to talk about that you are very interested in talking about last week and apparently forgot already. And then we're going to talk a little bit about BCS as we get ready for the championship game, maybe a little bowl wrap-up. Starting with the coaches, I want to start in college because the Triple Option is kind of based there. Pops, this is just a quick question. I don't expect this conversation to last very long, but with the almost cult-like, almost they were considered unfireable for so long, coaches like Paterno and Bowden and now Brown out, do you think it's time for Frank Beamer to get ousted at Virginia Tech? Because that team has really slipped, and I'm looking for you to kind of talk to me here from several years ago because they're an ACC team, so I expect you to have some kind of commonality here with them.
Okay, I would think he's probably, you know, obviously they have not won a national championship, but he's led them to the most successful reign that they've had. Having said that, I think the ACC is probably going to take a notch, step up, or try to with Notre Dame coming in and Louisville. I would think probably in the next year or two he is going to start feeling some heat because they've slipped off as far as being a national team, and now they're more regional. And so I wouldn't say he's going to get whacked this year, but I'd say he's going to start his seat's going to start warming up.
Yeah, see, that's where I'm too. And I don't know. Can you give me kind of your take as these coaches? They've coaches have been along. I mean, Paterno and them have been coaches since what? Since you've been alive. Does it mean anything to you to see guys like Brown and obviously in the most recent years, Paterno and Bowden get ousted?
I wouldn't put Mac Brown with Bobby Bowden and Joe Paterno simply because they've been there 30 some years, won national championships, and they're pretty much the establishment. Mac Brown has turned Texas around, but in the pantheon of great coaches, I'm sorry, I don't put Mac Brown there.
Well, I just meant more so in terms of longevity and kind of, he almost had like a cult-like status to the same way as those two, though, is kind of what I'm referring to.
Yeah, I guess, but I think the way Texas handled it was really pathetic. You know, they said, up till it, they come out, everything was being leaked, more than likely, said he was going to be gone. When somehow Mac Brown got the point that he's going to be gone, then he's like, you know, I'm going to leave. And Texas is like, we want you to stay. And he's like, screw you guys, I'm leaving. I think guys that have turned programs around deserve to be treated better. Unfortunately, Mac Brown hasn't. Joe Paterno, I hope he rots in hell because he knew what was going on. He should have been fired and thrown in jail. Bobby Bowden, I don't like what happened because basically they forced him out.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned up basically a program that probably didn't have a football and football cleats into a national power. It's a lot like what you saw at Purdue with Tiller, and when the Morgan Burke hired Danny Hope to be his whatever he was, his flunky, assistant flunky in
right.
waiting. And then they did the same thing to Gene Katie. They hired Painter to be his flunky in waiting, his assistant coach. I know it's a business, but how about some loyalty here? I think these guys that mean so much to this program, Katie and Tiller, are pretty much the standard bearers for Purdue, which I know is kind of the tall midget argument. But, you know, locally speaking, I didn't like either one of them. And you saw the Hope hiring was really, frankly, a disaster because you end up firing him. I'm starting to question the Painter because, I'm sorry, Matt Painter, you've had one recruiting class, and that's all you've had. And in my book, you're starting to run out of time. So I expect to see more. I hope Hazel can turn it around. But from the Nash perspective, you get into that. It's kind of like you got an old player who wants to constantly hang around, and you want to tell him that, well, you know, how do you ever think about maybe retiring and moving down to Florida? That you're doing everything except pushing them out the door. Same thing with these coaches. The problem is there's so much damn money out there that these administrators and bean counters and ADs and everybody and all the damn alumni and the jerk-offs that run the university think, hey, we got to get another guy in here, you know, that's right. going to put us up there. So the guy that brought us there is like, yeah, but what have you done for us lately? And I think I hate that lack of loyalty factor.
Two quick questions because you brought it up before I go back to the national college landscape. One, does the freshman class this year combined with Hammonds and Simpsons, that class kind of last year, giving any hope that Painter maybe, I don't want to say hit on something similar to the Baby Boilers, because that was obviously almost a once-in-a-lifetime class, it looks like. And two, does the lack of success around Purdue and maybe kind of the way that Burke has handled the hirings before make you feel like, maybe not necessarily, because I don't think you're going to do it on purpose, make you feel like you're going to give Hazel kind of a shorter leash because you really expect a turnaround maybe a little bit quicker, and also because kind of the hype was built up around this guy when he immediately was hired?
No, your first question is clearly because what his first class done of Johnson and Moore, and Hummel. That took them to national heights that they were 24-3 when Robbie Hummel tore his ACL up there in Minnesota. Were probably, I think they were, what, four or five or third?
Something. They were in the top
five.
They had
the Big 10-1. They looked like a definitive team to get into the Final Four. You know, this team can't beat anybody unless it's Maryland, Northeastern State University, Texas A, or Tech A&M State. I mean, they've got to start beating some people. You know, wake me up when you beat some people. You know, you remember Duke come in here when Hummel was a sophomore?
Yes.
You know, okay, well, has anybody close to Duke come in here? No. So until they start beating some teams that doesn't have directional states on them, or A&Ms, or, you know, Eastern Shore, Western Shore, something like that, I'm having a hard time, and all my cynicism and sarcasm aside, beat somebody.
Tyler, what do you think? The most recent freshman and sophomore classes give you any hope that maybe he's finally gotten into some better recruiting?
But you're still dealing with questions on the fact that it's a maybe in the tournament, and a maybe they're going to be a somewhat middling factor in the Big Ten tournament. No. Not unless you're like, yeah, they're actually in the mix, and yeah, not a maybe they're in the mix. It doesn't. Then no. If you're that close, if you're that on the cusp, then you're not that dangerous.
All right, Pops, the Hazel question. Do you feel like you're going to give him a shorter leash just because of the Hope hiring and the Painter hiring, which you now really don't seem to like, and you can only be so bad for so long before you're sick of it as well?
It's not that I don't like the Painter hiring. I mean, he brought success. I want to see him get that success back. The Hazel one, this is unlike what Purdue's done. They've gone out and get the up-and-coming, or one of the up-and-coming young guys, and the Painter wasn't. I'm sorry. He was 1 year at Southern Illinois. He was 25-5. So I wouldn't say that I'm going to be on a shorter leash, but I'm still on the bandwagon. Now, maybe I'm positioning myself towards the back, but I'm still on the bandwagon. But clearly, he has a lot more work than any of us thought. Rebuild, reload, reshape, whatever, redo, re-blow it up, start over. I don't know what you're going to call the slogan this year, but it's almost kind of like rebuild and we'll get back to you later. Because they've got a lot of work to do, but I'm just hopeful that he can start getting some recruits in here. So at this point, I'd say no, but you're right. I get sick of watching just teams that suck. I mean, because there's nothing more frustrating than being a fan of a team that blows.
Well, especially when you look in your own conference and you see teams like Ohio State and Michigan State that are so good at pretty much everything almost year in and year out.
Well, you have 8 bowl tie-ins, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like you could accidentally still make a bowl, you know, and go anyway. I mean, they're letting teams go in to 6-6 to the Kraft Salad Macaroni and Cheese Mayonnaise Bowl. I mean, they've got more bowl names. It's a joke. And, you know, the one enjoyment I've gotten out of this whole bowl thing is watching over and seeing how lack of people show up to these things. And frankly, most of these bowls, other than the BCS, are less than half capacity.
Yeah. Before we move back, Pops took it totally local, and I like this. Todd, let me get your thoughts on the Hazel thing. Do you think you're going to give him kind of a shorter leash? One, because you're just tired of Purdue being so bad, and two, because the hirings Purdue's done before that really haven't worked out.
I'd give him a shorter leash, especially because, I don't know, I mean, I like the idea of going to get the up-and-coming college guy that takes a smaller school. I'd also like to see them possibly look at what other schools have done and go and look at the NFL and looking at who can bring their expertise back down to the college rank. So, I mean, you win one game in your first year, you expect to do a lot more, especially considering Hope did get somehow 6 wins before. I'd like that, and I'd like to see him be consistent, because everything about this past year, especially with the offense, just with schemes, was not consistent. It seemed like they were saying one thing and doing another thing the half, and they came back like, oh, we're going to do the opposite, and they did the other thing the second half. I mean, it didn't make any sense. It seemed like he was lying to people saying what he was going to do when he clearly was doing something completely different.
Inconsistent would be probably the top word to describe the Purdue program. I want to move back to the national landscape where we started. Pops, what does it say to you that these jobs that were once considered premier jobs, USC, Texas, it seems like nobody wants them, but the top guys don't want them. And that just, 5-10 years ago, those were the Texas was open, or USC were just like, it was a line a mile long.
I think it's the nature of the sport. I mean, 50 years ago, Army and Navy were the top programs. Now, you probably couldn't get anybody to go to Army if you paid them a bonus. It's just the nature of how things fluctuate, you know, and the strength of football is in the Southeastern Conference. Those are the jobs. What Texas used to be, what USC used to be, and what the numbnuts up in Notre Dame still can't figure out is that's not a great job either. They think it is. It isn't. Because, you know, I'm sorry, they've slipped in national prominence. But I think it's just the nature of the cyclical nature of sports. College football, recruiting, or the people's teams going just like this. Nebraska 10 years or 20 years ago, at your guys' age, was it. Now, I think they're just, you know, you could win 9 games, but what is that?
Right.
You know, Oklahoma is kind of on that trend now, too. And where 5 years ago, they were a national power, they'd be the team that everybody wanted to beat in the national championship game. And then, you know, but they were still good. Now they've slipped about two notches to the point that maybe Oklahoma State's better than they are. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's just, and that could be the reason that I've heard that Stoops is looking to get out, because I think he realizes he's done about as much as he can with Oklahoma. He somehow lost some of the, I think the recruits, like I said, are heading east and south. And I'm not trying to say I'm constantly arguing about the Southeastern Conference, but it's still the best football conference. But that's where the recruits are going.
Right.
You know, because how many, 25% of the guys drafted last year were out of the SEC, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, so it's just the nature of college sports, whatever you want to call it.
There's a reason that certain coaches, like I guess you can trace it back the past 5 years where it's been the big, those small guys are consistently getting success where the big guys are like, hey, you want to come our way? Peterson, Vanderbilt, or sorry, not Vanderbilt. What am I saying?
Franklin
and Vanderbilt. Guys like that, there's a reason that even Texas keeps calling and Franklin's like, no thanks. He wants to stay in the SEC. There's a reason they're like, no thank you. There's a reason that Jim Mora and Art Briles. I mean, Art Briles at Baylor, for God's sakes. 5 years ago, you would have said Art Briles, a coach from Baylor, turned down the Texas job. You'd be like, was he stupid? There's a reason he came out and said, you could keep your offer, Texas. I mean, what it seems like, Texas is going to get Charlie Strong, which I like, but that wasn't their first candidate. Hell no, that wasn't their first candidate. That was probably fifth, sixth, seventh. The list was being crossed off constantly at Texas, where they're like, are we going to get somebody to take this job, for God's sakes? I mean, everybody's coming out. Basically, everybody came out and was like, no, Texas, no thank you. And talking about Purdue, for God's sakes, can USC hire anybody that hasn't previously worked there? Does anybody else want the job besides guys who already have been there or alums? Can they get anybody else into that job? It seems they're like, okay, guys, pull up the alumni list. That's all we got. Let's hope somebody wants to coach us.
It's like your White Sox. They only want to hire former White Sox to do everything. I mean, because I don't know if they're afraid that they're going to get somebody from the outside. It's like Al Davis. Al Davis only wanted to hire his guys. When he brought in the two guys, Shanahan and Gruden, he couldn't get them out of there fast enough because they were like, I don't want to do this, Al. But it's just, Texas has got to realize what you're saying. I don't know what to make of Charlie Strong. Great, he's taken Louisville to new heights. Congratulations. I don't know what that means. You know, again, the power, the jobs you want are in the Southeastern Conference.
Talking about coaching hirings, we kind of dabbled in it on Three Sports Guns last week, but Pops and I we talked about something off mic that we wanted to get into, and Pops, I actually wanted to start with that stat you tweeted about the Cleveland Browns and how much money they're paying former coaches. Yeah, but pull that up here real fast, because this is just mind-boggling number as to why Cleveland is an awful organization.
Is this the portion of the show where we're going to start taking pot shots at Cleveland?
It'll be sealed if Tyler starts doing it.
Actually, I recommend we start calling the Cleveland Clowns. Browns have paid or are paying 6 head coaches about $49 million not to work.
There you go, Ty. You want to jump in on that one?
I'm still left over this year alone.
They just from what I gather, let me take a look. Cleveland Browns throwing you a kind of a lob pitch, so take your pot shots. Because frankly, I think we should commit to make a cheap shot once a week at these guys. Actually, more than that. They owe Chris Palmer $3 million. Butch Chris Davis Palmer, $12 million. That was a long time ago. Romeo Cornell $10 million.
I'm
reading these off. Chris Palmer, 3 years, $3 million. Butch Davis, 3 years, $12 million. Romeo Cornell, 3 years, approximately $10 million. Eric Mangini, who we talked about, another Belichick guy that burned, 2 years, $7.8 million. Pat Shermer, 2 years, about $5.6 million. And Rob Pudzinski, 3 years, $10.5 million. That's your $49 million.
So they have almost, they're paying about half the money they're paying to keep players on, they're playing guys to not work for them. They're giving these guys money that just don't come back.
Yes, basically, if you had to pay coaches off your salary cap, Cleveland and Ohio have almost half their salary cap tied up in dead money from coaches.
Speaking of coach, we had...
Congratulations, Cleveland Clowns.
It sounds like you could work for Cleveland for a year and retire off the money they're going to owe you the rest of your
why
life.
Why can't one of us get hired by Cleveland? We can't do any worse and get whacked.
I agreed. Speaking of the coaching thing, Pops, now I want to jump back into the argument we were having about hiring in the NFL, about how really, if you really take a look at it, it doesn't really look like you have to be qualified, per se, to get a job. I'm going to let you start it, and I'm going to jump in with you.
No, I would agree with you, because it seems like that if you're a lackey of Peyton Manning, you know, or you're the supposed quote-unquote offensive coordinator for Peyton Manning, which would just be like the guy that, hey, I need some coffee. Or somehow if you're affiliated with working under Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, Bill Belichick's complete network of people who knows people who knows people, that somehow that qualifies you for a job. Now, how many Cleveland guys, how many of Belichick's guys have actually worked out?
Well, you talked about
Dimitroff.
Right, one out of about, what, 8 or 9?
Yeah, because you talked about Mangini, there's McDaniels.
Weiss.
Paoli.
Cornell.
Yeah, Cornell. I'm sure there's more. There's probably smaller time guys that just have never.
Lombardi, who's back now running Cleveland, but he was with Belichick when he was in '94 when they're in Cleveland. So you know it was so good then they decided, hey, we sucked then, so let's go back to the future and suck some more and bring in Lombardi, who apparently the firing a guy after 1 year. I get that, but to be honest with you, it's mind boggling that you can't figure out that he's a jerk off. Does anybody do any background check there in Cleveland?
Well, apparently not. You would think after firing 3 or 4 coaches and still paying them, they'd maybe try a little harder, and then they fired the 5th and the 6th. I mean, what are they doing? But the one that gets me, the Mangini one the Belichick one's a great one. It was the Broncos one that you brought up that really is what got this conversation rolling.
Yeah, the guy Goss, who supposedly worked under Mike Martz, Mike Martz endorses him. If you don't believe in Mike Martz, Mike Martz is supposedly endorsing him. He's now the supposed quote unquote offensive coordinator, which is really Peyton Manning, which like I was saying earlier, I think that constitutes. I need some coffee, kid. But he's being mentioned prominently from what, Cleveland, Detroit,
Minnesota.
And it's they can't hire these supposed guys fast enough. And the problem is Mike McCoy, who actually has risen up through the ranks and really did work with Tebow, your guy.
And Orton.
Orton.
He made him a league-leading passer.
And then Peyton Manning, which I don't really know what working with him means. But anyway, he's worked with all three, so he has a track record. Goss, I never heard of him.
No.
But supposedly because he works with, he's somehow affiliated through an affiliation with Denver's, what, set the record for most points?
Yeah.
You know, they can't hire him fast enough as a coach.
Yeah, long story short, if you are the OC for Peyton Manning, you're going to be a hot head coaching candidate.
Or Tom Brady, because those are the two hot guys. I mean, all those guys. Weiss was the OC. Cornell was the defensive coordinator.
Yep. Mangini was the DC.
Defensive coordinator. Yep. McDaniel was the
offensive coordinator.
The one that has worked out appears to be O'Brien, but do we really know if he's going to work out in Houston?
We'll find out here soon.
Track record says no.
The other thing, too, that you talked about, which we should probably talk about, too, especially with the Tampa Bay hiring and technically Andy Reid, is that if you're not associated with someone and looking apparently underqualified, you're a retread.
Yeah, they hired the retread, so they went out and hired Lovey, so we really like our players.
Who brought in Marinelli.
Yeah.
And, well, Frazier, I think, is a good DC. Sometimes, I'll be honest, sometimes there's just coordinators that can't be head coaches, but Frazier is in as his DC, that Tedford guy who I still don't know anything about.
I can't say I remember him, but supposedly he has a track record, but, you know, the guys that Lovey brought in for offensive coordinator, you know, supposedly we had success at other places. So I think, here's the joke of the thing. You got to guess, you want to take a guess where the Tampa Bay really needs to put all their effort in drafting at?
Offensive
line.
That's what I thought, so.
Hold your hand up if we've not heard this one before. It's Chicago.
I like to see, I honestly told Blair's before, I guarantee it, you will hear one of the two You'll hear either Jamarcus Webb getting called up saying, Lovie Smith said, we need some Webb down here blocking. Or he's going to call Kellen Davis and say, we need a tight end. We need those drops in the end zone in Tampa.
I heard, don't be surprised if Urlacher gets a call.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about retreads, at least Lovie Smith had some success for as much fun as we're making about him. Jim Caldwell is supposedly a candidate
for Washington
and Detroit. Did he not? Is he not the one that screwed up the Colts after Dungy? Like, hey, the engine's running. It's a pristine car. Just stand back and let it go. And he was like, no, I got to screw this up.
Well, the only reason he had any success is because who was quarterbacking the Colts?
Peyton Manning. That's what I'm saying.
It's kind of like, hey, I got the offense. He's like, okay. I won't, and I don't know who ran the defense, but it's not exactly like the Colts were defensive juggernaut. It was Peyton Manning.
No.
So Hal Caldwell gets that, and then the other thing is he goes in last year and replaces Cam Cameron because Cam Cameron didn't know who Ray Rice was, and then he's affiliated with a Super Bowl winner. So that even really makes it even look worse.
Well, he has a ring with the Colts, too, I think. I think he was on Dungy's staff.
I think he was assistant head coach or something.
He was the OC.
Could be, but I mean, that's that too, and I guess we're going to heap on here because we're punching Cleveland in the face. Lane Kiffin, I think, is another great example.
God.
He's an OC at USC under Carroll, and then turns that into like 10 jobs.
Yeah, everybody can't hire this guy fast enough, and then he quits after 1 year and gets even a better contract. He says, oh, no, I'm going to stay here. You can be honest, or you can trust me. And then 2 years later, he quits, not to mention his team suck. But somehow people can't stop throwing money at him.
So basically what you're telling me here, and Tyler, correct me if I'm wrong, is I got to go find a way to be an offensive coordinator for one of these coaches that everyone respects, and then I am locked into getting an NFL job after an NFL job for like the next 15 years.
Well, just about,
because you're going to get someone in the management, and then 10 years after you get fired, they're going to go down to some place and say, let's get the band back together, guys. Let's just have to Tampa.
Yeah,
they're like, everybody get back down here. We're getting the band back together
now.
Go get
Gunther. We need an OC. He was with us 10 years ago, even though the offensive sucked. Bring him back down.
He's 10 years older, but he can still run. I mean, that's what I think it's funny about. I talked about Blair with the Bears. They're talking about like Urlacher, Tillman could be falling, like Melton could be falling to Tampa. I understand to keep Melton, but these smell those guys. I'm thinking you can have them.
Peppers, if he gets cut,
you can have them. Because it seems like he's taking the crappiest of the crap load. Be like, you can have them 10 years past their prime.
Well,
all
the
you
problem
want,
is Parcells did that. He had like 4 or 5 guys that every place he went. They were there. I mean, if he went home and had dinner, they were showing up at dinner, too. It was that bad. I mean, because every place he went, he brought along Pepper Rodgers and when he couldn't play, he made him a coach. So, I mean, those are Parcells' guys, and it's kind of like Lovie wants to get his... And what's really kind of a bigger joke is they hired Lovie, they ain't hired a GM. What does that tell you?
Well, that means it would appear that he's going to have some say-so in who gets picked for his team.
Sounds like Kellen Davis has got a job down in Tampa. Drop. Maybe Roy Williams gets a call. Maybe Cedric Benson.
Tyler, you're making my head hurt because you're looking at all these disasters that supposedly were top draft picks for the Bears.
I'm trying to think of worse.
Hold on. You got your pop shots. Pop, let me ask you a question. Is that like a culture thing in the NFL because of these glories of coaching trees that we used to have? Because in the past, way more successful, because obviously there's coaching failures. But whenever you talk about the history of the NFL, you always hear about the coaching trees, and it's always the guys that were great, and I'm sure there were guys that were bad, but is that part of like the culture? It's just maybe it's a fraternity, and that's why people keep getting jobs?
It's a fraternity in the sense that, once you're a coach and you have any semblance of success, which is kind of difficult now because of the salary cap restrictions and free agency where you get hit on 1 or 2 years. And remember the 10 years ago when the guy won 10 games and everybody else is suspended? Hey, come on back. Yeah, I think the coaching tree, which is, I think some sportscaster probably was bored and decided to come up with some ideas how coaches got hired. Now it's become to the point that it's come to an extreme ludicrousness of some of the stupidity of the guys being hired, and it just goes. It makes me question the intent and the brains behind the general managers or presidents, or even the owners, because there's too many owners involved in now making decisions. They don't know a damn thing about football. They might claim to, but they don't know anything. And you know who I'm talking about.
Obviously, Cleveland. They keep switching ownership
and
making offices.
Well, Jerry Jones is involved.
Irsay's
involved.
Snyder.
Snyder's involved. You know, and it's just Al Davis was the, everybody looks to Al Davis and say he wants to be like him. And, you know, I question really the general mentality of the general managers too, because it seems to me, you know, it's like when Angelo got hired by the Bears, he was claiming that, you know, guys were picked even though he was nothing more than like a regional scout, that he was on the staff or he might have made a suggestion or accidentally burped when they were going on evaluation. Somehow that made a difference. I mean, come on.
Right. All right, let's jump to the BCS to wrap this up. We're national championship game is the last one left. We got all four of the BCS bowls out of the way. Pops, whatever. I'm going to kick it to Tyler here first. What did you think? I thought we had some pretty solid games for all four of the big ones.
For most of the game, I mean, just about all of them, I don't think the team who was supposed to win won. I think you can almost call all of them an upset, which is pretty surprising. The only game I could say it was probably really neck and neck was Michigan State Stanford. I feel like Stanford was probably more likely favored, but all the other ones seemed like an upset.
Stanford was favored. It was like by 7 or something. Pops, what do you think? Because I heard an interesting argument, because you talked about the attendance at bowls earlier in the podcast, and there's an argument going around, because they were talking about the Rose Bowl, of course, because it's the only thing the Pac-12 and Big Ten have, that people are worried that attendance might dwindle because the Rose Bowl is set to be a semifinal, and so people might have the attitude, well, oh, my team's going to the semifinal, should I go to this bowl, or should I maybe save up in case they get to the championship? Whereas I'm kind of on the other side. I think that's ridiculous. I think that they have too many bowls is the problem. I don't think the Rose Bowl will have less attendance because the bowl will mean something more now.
I don't, even if it didn't, I think the Rose Bowl is one of those things that sells itself out, because who the hell wouldn't want to go out to L.A., California when, you know, we're looking at another killer whatever storm here where Antarctica is basically going to last jump on or fall on us. I don't think that's an issue. I think it's a moronic argument. I would think maybe some of the lesser bowls, maybe. But the Rose Bowl, basically, it's kind of like, you know, some of these, Alabama, LSU almost recruit themselves because of the name. All you have to do is throw a name out. People are like, oh, where do I sign? Where do I sign? It's the same thing here as far as selling tickets out. You know, people can't buy the Rose Bowl tickets fast enough.
Well, okay, then change it to, say, the Fiesta or the Orange Bowl. Do you think it would be an issue for them if they're a semifinal for the national championship in a playoff system?
I kind of want to jump in now because it almost sounds like they're complaining.
Come on in, Tyler. Jump in.
Oh, no, you've been talking most of this. Don't even try.
Because you're busy dealing on your whatchamacallit.
You don't even know what I'm doing. It seems like they're basically complaining about the fact that there's more games before the end game. Isn't that what everything has? I mean, that's like saying if you're the Colts, you're like, I don't want to go to the wild card because they make it to the Super Bowl.
No. The complaint is that the Rose Bowl itself, and it was based on the Rose Bowl, but let's expand it to the Fiesta, the Orange Bowl, whichever bowls aren't the national championship. Their complaint is that they're worried that attendance won't be as high because people will instead be like, if you're a Michigan State fan, say this year, and you were in the Rose Bowl you were playing it and for a chance to go to the national championship, some Michigan State fans might be like, ooh, should I go to Pasadena or should I just save up money in case they get a chance to go to the national championship and then go to that one?
That it means more. Why would it?
I'm on that boat.
Like, if you're doing it now, you'd be like, this is the game. You go, they're not going to win anymore. You got to go and be like, if they could win and be more, it means more because it's more of a gateway. Why would you say you wouldn't want to? That's like saying, if they think that, I'd be like, all right, so you're saying that if your team had a chance to be in the Rose Bowl and go play for the national championship, you would pick just a Rose Bowl regular. I don't really want to play for a national championship. Let's just play for the Rose Bowl. It's about the national championship. Nobody's playing to go to the Rose Bowl. Nobody's saying, no, nothing. There's no banner that says, highest priority, go to the Rose Bowl. Guarantee that is never anywhere. That's like saying, highest priority, win one playoff game. It's to win the championship. It doesn't matter if you win the Rose Bowl and that's it. There's always a team that's better for you. It's not about being third best. It's about being the best. That's kind of pointless to say that.
Tyler, I feel like you're talking in circles. To be honest with you, I think it really depends on the matchup, but I can see you're looking at locales in Arizona and Florida where I think people are going to want to go because of the weather factor. But, you know, that is, I will say that I think it is a possibility, because if your team doesn't get into the national championship or doesn't get into the Final Four, so to speak, there could be some lethargy. I mean, that's what you saw basically out of Bama in Oklahoma. You know, Oklahoma was just damn glad to be there. Bama was like, yeah, okay, let's play. There could be some games where the attendance is affected because teams are like, what the hell's the use? you know, I'm in a BCS or whatever you want to call it, Fiesta Bowl, but what does it mean? Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's going to do it this week for the triple option. Three Sports Guns, the About page has a QR scanner for our Android app. You can find all of the podcasts on iTunes for free. Just download the podcast app for iTunes. ThreeSportsGuns.com for the articles, Facebook and Twitter. Take the pitch, triple option. Stay up to date on that. And for the triple option, I'm Blair Gunther.
Tyler Gunther.
Harold Gunther.
Watch out for the pitch.